This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the Journal of Neurosurgery podcast for April 15th, 2011. I'm Natalie Pynchon. I will be reading a summary of some of the articles published by the JNS today. The article topics in this podcast are chronic pulmonary disease after neurosurgery, medical schools and residency graduate productivity, vascular disorders, functional neurosurgery, and traumatic brain injury. Medical school and residency influence on choice of an academic career and academic productivity among neurosurgery faculty in the United States. A clinical article by Peter Campbell and colleagues. This study seeks to evaluate the graduates of medical schools and U.S. residency programs to determine those programs that produce a high number of graduates remaining within academic programs and the contribution of these graduates to academic neurosurgery as determined by H-index valuation. Determining what factors may predict the choice of an academic career could aid in resident selection and in medical student counseling. The impact of mentorship and of academic exposure may influence career choices. The author studied which elements influence choice of an academic career in neurological surgery. While their primary goal was to assess what individual factors might predict academic success, they believed that the impact of medical school and residency experiences had to be assessed initially. The authors compiled a database of nearly 1,000 physicians in academic neurosurgical practice, defined as faculty members within active residency programs. They obtained H indices on all surveyed physicians. They garnered medical school and residency information on the faculty members and then determined which institutions were most effective in producing academic neurosurgeons. The top three neurosurgical training programs in the author's assessment accounted for 10% of all physicians in active academic practice. The top 20 programs generated nearly 50% of all academic neurosurgeons. Similar findings were noted in assessment of medical school productivity. The interplay of personal and institutional factors in choice of an academic career and in success within academics has not yet been delineated. The authors conclude that the influence of medical school and residency experiences on career choice appears significant. Dose-dependent neurorestorative effects of delayed treatment of traumatic brain injury with recombinant human erythropoietin in rats. A laboratory investigation by Yu-Ling Meng and co-authors. The dose-response effects of delayed erythropoietin treatment for traumatic brain injury have not been established. In this study, the authors randomly assigned brain-injured rats to erythropoietin dose groups, that is 1,000, 3,000, 5,000 or 7,000 units per kilogram body weight. Brain-injured rats received 3 intraperitoneal injections of each dose at 24, 48 and 72 hours after injury. Brain-injured rats receiving saline served as treatment controls. Neurological functional measurements were performed pre-injury and on days 1, 4, 7, 14, 21, 28, and 35 post-injury. Spatial learning capacity was evaluated by the Morris-Water-Maze test on days 31 to 35 post-injury. All animals were killed 35 days after injury. Compared to the saline treatment, erythropoietin treatment at doses from 1,000 to 7,000 units per kilogram did not reduce brain lesion volume, but significantly reduced hippocampal neuron loss, enhanced angiogenesis and neurogenesis in the injured brain, and significantly improved functional recovery. The medium dose at 5,000 units per kilogram exhibited a significant improvement in histological and functional outcomes compared with the lower or higher erythropoietin dose groups. These data demonstrate that application of an optimal dose of erythropoietin is likely to increase successful preclinical and clinical trials for treatment of traumatic brain injury. Mapping of microstimulation-evoked responses and unit activity patterns in the lateral hypothalamic area recorded in awake humans. A technical note by W. Brian Willent and co-authors. Major contributions to the understanding of human brain function have come from clinical reports of neurosurgeries on awake humans, in which responses evoked by electrical stimulation and electrical activity of specific brain regions were described in detail. In this study, microstimulation-evoked responses and extracellular unit recordings were obtained intraoperatively from three awake patients undergoing bilateral implantation of deep brain stimulation electrodes in the lateral hypothalamus. The microstimulation-evoked responses exhibited a clear anatomical distribution. Anxiety was most reliably evoked by stimulation directed ventromedially within or adjacent to the ventromedial nucleus of the hypothalamus. Nausea was most reliably evoked by stimulation directed at the center of the lateral hypothalamus. And paresthesias were most reliably evoked by stimulation at the border of the lateral hypothalamus and basal nuclei. Regarding the unit recordings, the firing rates of individual neurons did not have an anatomical distribution, but a small subpopulation of neurons located at the border of the lateral hypothalamus and basal nuclei exhibited a fast, rhythmically bursting behavior with an intraburst frequency of 200 to 400 Hz and an interburst frequency of 10 to 20 Hz. The lateral hypothalamus is situated so as to play a dynamic and complex role in human behavior, and this report further shows this to be true. Aggressive intervention to treat a young woman with intracranial hemorrhage following unsuccessful intravenous thrombolysis for left middle cerebral artery occlusion. A case report by Kyle Michael Fargen and colleagues. Stroke patients failing to improve after intravenous tissue plasminogen activator administration may be candidates for endovascular stroke intervention. Patients with new intracerebral hemorrhage noted during such interventions pose a difficult challenge to neurointerventionists and are often sequestered as treatment failures and deemed inappropriate for intra-arterial recanalization efforts. The authors present a case in which aggressive intra-arterial intervention was performed despite evidence of contrast extravasation at the time of pre-intervention angiography. There is little peer-reviewed data in the literature to aid in the decision-making process in this setting. The authors note that continuation of mechanical endovascular stroke intervention in light of active contrast extravasation may be warranted in young patients with major deficits and absence of arterial displacement or delayed global filling, and that further thrombolytic treatment is not advised. In selected stroke patients, continuation of a planned attempt at mechanical recanalization without further use of thrombolytics may be warranted in light of known intracranial hemorrhage. The effects of chronic pulmonary disease on hospital length of stay and cost of hospitalization after neurosurgery. A clinical article by Narayana Varabatla and Ziyi Zhu. Chronic lung diseases are common in the neurosurgical population. However, it is not known how they affect length of stay and cost of hospitalization after neurosurgical procedures. The authors attempted to answer this question with a retrospective study of more than 26,000 patients over a 15-year period at their institution. They evaluated length of stay and cost of hospitalization in patients with and without lung disease. They found that patients with lung disease stay up to 4 days longer in the hospital after undergoing ventriculostomy and 1 day longer in patients undergoing craniotomy. The cost of hospitalization increased by more than $6,500 per patient. At their institution, this equates to $32 million in additional costs for patients with chronic lung diseases over the 15-year study period. The authors hope that this study highlights the economic impact of this common comorbidity in the neurosurgical population and focuses renewed attention on optimizing preoperative and postoperative care in these patients. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is now contained in the newly launched American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at www.thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.